Okay, hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 451. I'm your host, Wheels, watching the AAA game industry implode in real time, and with me as always.
Watching that happen for the last 5 years, David McBurney, Fanboy Master.
Finding for a time when we didn't watch it happen, your man in Japan, Michael Baker, Gaiji Mutari.
Did it really start that long ago?
At least.
What was the canary? What was the canary in the coal mine for this?
Honestly, like, I would have said that, like, some of the immediate spending immediately following COVID was a reasonable indicator, but Sony announcing their intentions to produce like 12 live service games was not helping.
Ooh, yeah, that was bad.
That was in like 2022.
I think the whole Spider-Man 2 thing was kind of like alarm bells for me. Like, did we spent all this time and money, did anyone notice? Maybe it wasn't alarm bells at the time, but looking back, it seems like that should have been a warning sign. But this wasn't working. Did I lose you guys? What's going on?
No.
Back in a moment.
Uh-oh. I was going to say the other alarm bell probably would have been when Square Enix seemed disappointed in sales of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And then sometime after that, we got ports of that to other systems. That did not seem healthy.
I know my oft-cited reporting of like boots on the ground, where are the PlayStation games in the stores? Investigation. So.
Not many, I would guess.
As I have mentioned many a time, most the PS5 section was adjunct to the PS4 section and had most of the same games. Practically every time I have checked. Up through like 6 months ago, I think it was the last time I bothered paying attention, it was still largely a merged section.
Oof.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like they tried to force that to not happen here. I know there were a lot of games that did have PS4 versions that were not released in the US, seemingly to get people to buy PS5, I guess.
Man, I haven't done a real census in forever. It's just the vibe is that there's no real separation between the two PlayStation sections. And there's still a generous amount of overlap. I haven't checked to see what the actual numbers are for one side or the other, but the fact that the PS4 section is still in existence,
that's not
6 years after I first checked it in like 2020.
Yeah. I mean, granted, physical sales of PS5 and Xbox have been declining, but just those sections and like the Targets and Walmarts I go have been shrinking for a long time. And not even necessarily, I think, because like the game, some of the games they have weren't selling. I just think there's been like so fewer games than there used to be.
Yeah, the number of like major AAA games has drastically gone down. That segues nicely into the death of Electronic Arts as we know it.
Vomit.
They have been purchased. Like the purchase announcement was made last year. They have now been purchased like $50 billion by a combination of venture funding and the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, which is not great. I personally will never purchase a game from them as long as they are owned by this particular conglomerate. It's bad. Quite aside from anything else, they are likely to contribute a few thousand more layoffs in this at this rate, because of the manner of the buyout, which is our old friend, the leveraged buyout.
But that went so well for beloved retailer Toys R Us.
And other thing you've ever heard.
No, I mean, yes, the fact is that it did work out very well for the people doing the buyout.
Mm.
The people who did not actually care about Toys R Us. And I would like to say that, I would like to note that I'm pretty sure that this kind of thing is illegal in Japan because we still have a Toys R Us over here.
It's there is a separate entity that bought most of the non-US locations.
Yeah.
But
I wasn't
sure
if it was like that or if it was like how Japanese 7-Eleven managed to out-leverage the American 7-Eleven and now owns the entire thing.
Really?
Nah, in this case, it's... Yes, Japanese 7-Eleven
is
enormous.
Like that for a decade now.
Think you can fucking bank at Japanese 7-Eleven, but...
yeah, you can. It's 7 and I Holdings now.
Yeah. But, yes. So, to hit the important parts here, approximately $20 billion worth of that debt was saddled onto EA's own books. $30 billion was, like, bent out of the investors' pockets, and they must pay, like, say, $1.8 billion, something like that, per year.
Is this somehow legal?
Yeah, $1.8 billion-ish per year until, as purely as, like, interest on the principal. They don't make enough money as they exist to do that. they could maybe make the interest payments. They could not meaningfully pay down the principal. They would just be paying. The intention they've announced.
The point of interest payments and principal is that you're never supposed to pay down the principal.
Yes, theoretically, you would want that. If you cared about, like, the company making money in any way other than, like, parasitism, you would want them to eventually pay that down because that's the only way they can expand and theoretically make more money, but they don't care. But broadly speaking, the way that they intend to bridge this gap is by selling, seems to be a fire sale of other sub-studios and to just fire and close things down to get rid of them. To lower, like, the cost of, like, people. Like, they claimed, like, a $700 million reduction of, like, operating costs, at least $200 million of which will be people. So I'm expecting, say, at least 1,000 layoffs. There was an interesting... an interesting video that briefly touched on this from Jason Schreier on YouTube, where he was talking about knowing he would not get an answer to this. He talked about asking Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick if he thought that they might make any purchases when EA inevitably goes on fire sale. Might actually be the best scenario for a lot of those studios. Like, Take-Two would be one of the only places that could actually theoretically take them on, but we shall see. Not purchasing another Electronic Arts games for the game for the foreseeable future, and my bet for place that is either shut down or sold off first is BioWare.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing.
Like, there, the Mass Effect 5 is at least 4 years out, if we're being generous. It's too, as far as investors, as far as their new owners are concerned, it kind of, like they are a huge liability that will not pay off anytime soon, and which may like and which historically has made games that their current owners like even would be find distasteful on political grounds. So fun, that's where we're at, because again, to be clear, the set of owners that have that pooled their resources together to make this purchase happen was both Saudi public investment fund and a bunch of like investment firms headed up by Donald Trump's son-in-law. All the more reason to find them distasteful. Yeah, won't be purchasing any Electronic Arts titles. Not that they've done much that, like, they barely make, like, we were talking about AAA, like, they barely make anything more. Yeah. Like, they make the sports games and Battlefield are all that come out. EA used to have an enormous portfolio, and now they have a, like, that's the other thing that, like, this purchase is, from a pure investment standpoint, like, Madden's huge, FIFA's huge.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost nothing else in that portfolio. Like, Battlefield occasionally will hit it out of the park and do Call of Duty numbers. That's kind of the entire portfolio, and Battlefield is consistent.
Do they own some mobile game studio? I'm forgetting.
They must, because, well, technically they've had, like, their hands in mobile and casual games for a long time. But, like, the thing I would put here is that, like, the only way for this investment to pay off in the traditional sense would be for them to experience growth. And EA is just not in that phase of their existence.
Mm.
There's no direction for them to grow in.
I mean, the AAA game space, if we're talking about that, is not growing anyway.
Yes, like that we know is not growing. Like, the only way, like, the direction for it to grow is, like, cheaper things being sold to places that traditionally could not afford AAA. Like, you make games primarily on mobile, PC, low specs that can be upgraded to higher specs, and you sell them to places that cannot afford the price of AAA by making them cheaper. But there's no more appetite for that. There is no push to make that real. Honestly, like, all these companies, like, the true derangement that exists here is that, like, there's no need for this mm-hmm. to be, like, there's no need for these places to grow. Things are profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Just, but because, you know, and I'll push towards another thing that, like, illustrates the same mindset, and, like, I was forced to have grudging respect that, like, any CEO was at least canny enough to see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
In that same, like, video where Schreier was talking about having talked to Strauss Zelnick, the primary thrust of the video was the amount of pre-orders for Grand Theft Auto 6. And Zelnick, in Take Two's investor call, was basically like, the numbers are unprecedented. They are higher than our internal expectation. Vastly higher than internal expectation. They won't say what that number is. And when I heard why, like, the reasoning why, I was at least, I could at least respect that they clearly understood how stupid investors are. Because Zelnick's reasoning for not reporting the numbers, and you'll get a lot more of this if you check Breyer's YouTube video, definitely check that out. But the quick and dirty of it was, reason that they would not report the exact numbers was that they don't know those numbers reflect a higher than expected audience. A larger than expected audience, like a larger than expected launch, or if it's just that the people who would have bought it day one are pre-ordering it and buying it before day one. Like, But if the investors hear a number, they will take that number and use it to adjust their expectations for how much Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to sell on launch day higher. And so, because of that, it would be possible that if it turns out that the demand is exactly in line with expectation, they're just buying it earlier, then the higher adjusted number investors would expect, turn out, they would miss. And so despite doing huge numbers, crazy, crazy numbers, it would still look bad on their because they had missed an investor expected target. Even though they had pointed out that the expectation of higher sales might be illusory, it wouldn't matter because the investors worked themselves into a froth and were disappointed. Really stupid.
It's almost like the stock market is a whole stupid scam.
It's a lot of people betting their betting tomorrow's rent on whether it will be raining.
Yikes.
It's very
and some gentlemen happily paying you tomorrow for a hamburger today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there's our chatter about the current goings-on of the AAA industry. This was sad. Let's move.
Well, there's also the less than AAA news that Devolver is trying to go private again for kind of the reason that investors...
They're going private for the reason you want.
Yes.
Like, theoretically, EA has just gone private. They've just gone private via the process of being purchased by the worst humans on the planet. But yes, Devolver is attempting to go private to not have to deal with investors who want, give me money now, me sick. The Devolver, put out a statement that was basically like, we wish to go private because we want to, you know, be making choices that are meant to, you know, allow us to have a long-term portfolio instead of being answerable to investors who want to see that the numbers went up a lot over the last 90 days. And, you know, Godspeed, if they can get, if like, the problem with going private is always finding the money to do it. Because, there's a lot of ways to go private, but, you know, there's Twitter and EA going private, and there's actually, you know, going private as in the people who own the company actually care about it, and those are a very different thing. So the real canary in the coal mine for them will be fine if they if and when they do, seeing what their funding sources do so. Crossed. Like Devolver.
Yeah, Devolver's cool. Hopefully they figure it
you
out.
Guys, Devolver, did you play Ball X Pit?
I've heard good things, but I haven't gotten around.
It's great. I believe it's a Devolver title. Oh, it's like Breakout, but better? Yeah.
It's a what?
It's like a roguelike Breakout pinball. Yeah, I believe that's Devolver Digital. That's why I brought it up. Hang on.
I believe that they did publish.
Yeah, Devolver Digital published. And Ball X Pit is a brick-breaking, ball-fusing, base-building survival roguelite.
Well, there's a combination.
Eh? Yeah.
I'm going to keep bringing it up. You should look up Screaming Mad George's Paranoia Escape for the PlayStation 1, which is a first-person pinball game.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
And then Devolver Digital also made the other game I like. Hold on.
Public, but yes.
Oh, they've made a lot of stuff. Oh, boy.
Yeah, they've published so much.
So, what was the other
They did.
Game? They used to have the deranged E3 videos.
Yes. Yeah, they still do every year.
Did they do one this year?
Maybe not this year, but... Now I'm remembering, like, I'm just thinking about deranged pinball games. I'm remembering Flipnik for the PS2, which also has just a truly incredible Japanese cover. Let me see if I can find this. Just trying to find the Japanese cover. I don't want the American cover. Japanese cover. Okay. But yeah, like, I'm going to keep listing deranged pinball games. Anyone here an Odama fan?
No.
Heard of it, haven't played it. Oh, Devolver Digital also published Loop Hero.
Okay, like there it is.
Didn't that require, like, the bongo drums or something?
No, that was an optional secondary thing.
Okay.
You, like, Odama was a real-time strategy pinball game for the GameCube, made by Yuji Saito, the Seaman director, which optionally supported the GameCube microphone to bark orders at your army that was on the pinball table, and the bongos could be plugged into a secondary slot so that, like, you would hit them to boost your truth morale.
Days when they really got really weird in development.
Yuji Saito never stopped, but yes.
Yeah. It was like half the reason I ended up stopping Japan Demonium was just because I was running out of, or there wasn't as much stuff to talk about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, bringing up beloved PS2 pinball game Flipnik, which had the subtitle Ultimate Pinball in the US, but in Japan had this on its cover. Flipnik is an enjoyable, simple, action, amazing pinball game for you.
Okay.
I'm amazed. I've never seen it before. I would definitely remember
that. I appreciate it.
Enjoyable, simple, action, amazing pinball game for you. Okay.
I was also a big fan on the Sega Saturn, Digital Pinball Necronomicon. That was cool.
Yeah. Sounds like someone trying to do Devil's Crush.
Kind of. And it had music from, I don't know if it was, it wasn't Dream Theater, I don't think, but.
Seems unlikely at the time.
Yeah, hold on. Let me, I can look that up, but it's.
Oh man, I was listening to a lot of
Dream Theater
this weekend.
Who did
the music?
Sorry,
carry on.
What?
I said I was listening to lots of Dream Theater this weekend.
Which album?
The Astonishing and Metropolis Part 2.
Yes, okay.
And I had the weird thought that I wanted to buy them on vinyl. I think I'm going insane.
So I'm going to hit the question that we missed specifically in the comments last week.
I think there were a few, but go ahead.
There were a few, but this was the only one that was up last week by the time we recorded.
Okay.
However, there was a second one up that has been added
as well.
Before, I think, by the time you put the link to the last week's up on the page, so yeah, before then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so last week we had a question from Shaman that we missed. I don't accept the premise of Final Fantasy VI requiring 4 to 5 games be remade. Adding the GBA content to the Pixel Remaster would be enough. That said, if it was to happen, what parts of FF6 would be the best final sequences of the different games? First, FF6 would have to have sequences interesting enough to climax the game.
I was thinking about this, and I mean, the obvious answers would be first the escape from the Returners base for the end of the first section, then have the second section be the entire multiple groups doing stuff, possibly up through Zozo, or probably up through Zozo, and then the next section would be getting the airship and getting to the Empire. And I'm not sure where to draw a good line between that and the floating continent, but maybe just make that entire section one thing.
Yeah, the floating continent can't stand by itself. It needs to be, like, the climax. Yeah.
It needs to be the climax there, which means it has to have the Esper world and the mages village and all that. At least 5 separate major landmass locations. Yeah, it's not really paced very well for this kind of thing. I mean, it'd be much I mean, honestly, I could possibly see the World of Balance section being split into before Zozo and after Zozo.
Maybe.
And possibly subdivided a little more at the start, but World of Ruin is World of Ruin. It's one thing by itself. There's no good way of subdividing that.
So. Honestly, like, I'd do the blasphemy of, like, nipping, tucking, cutting, and expanding to get World of Balance to be one game and World of Ruin to be another.
Yeah, that's probably the best option. I'm just trying to imagine how much stuff that they would end up adding in just to, I mean, to justify anything else, because...
Like, what you run into...
It's still a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah, like, what you run into with the World of Balance is that, like, relatively speaking, it's not a huge world.
No.
There's not all that much there, and so you kind of need to do things like expand to give certain towns more of a, like, visual identity that they don't necessarily have.
I mean, the thing is, the World of Balance has the implication of more stuff,
yes.
That you're just, it just doesn't show up on the map.
Mm.
World of Balance.
You know there have to be more cities, and you know there have to be more towns, and just more people all around to support everything that you do see. But
like the capital of the empire feels pretty small.
But yeah, I mean, just the empire itself
feels kind of
small.
It's suggested that it's bigger. Yeah,
yeah.
I was going to say maybe there's a suggestion
of a lot of stuff that they're going to have to fill in massively in order to to make this work. And if they're doing that, then they are. Probably writing in an extra 80% of story.
Yeah, like, it's just not suited for this kind of remake, which is probably part of why they're, like, balking at the concept. But, yeah, like, FF7, they ultimately, like, as much as people after Midgar thought that there was going to be, like, 12 parts, they ultimately wisely realized that, like, Midgar could do with expansion because Midgar is an incredibly important and iconic location.
And Midgar was originally expanded beyond the original to begin with, wasn't it?
In what sense?
It's like, when they were making the original game and Toriyama came in, and he basically created two-thirds of the plot sequences within Midgar to begin with.
Actually, sure, I haven't looked into that, but...
I remember seeing interviews and stuff like this, but yeah, like... Like, a lot of what happened in Midgar in the original game was not in the original outline. They were planning on it being a much shorter section.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was previously expanded upon outside the original outline for the original game. And that kind of gave that separate sense that you could allow it to be its own game in the remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, Midgar was always a place that, like... One, was dramatically important for place setting. And two, like, had a ton of real estate that was known to exist, never shown. And, like, even the remake resists the temptation to show a ton of Midgar. It shows more of it, significantly more, but it doesn't show a ton. But, yes, like, that allowed it to stand as its own game. And then after that, like, Rebirth and Revelation are much more judicious about, like, oh, we're splitting the game into...
Yeah.
We need to speed this along. So you got all the way through the end of Disc 1. And then, you know, obviously, Disc 3 is a dungeon. So, like, going through Disc 2 when you've already done most of the locations... is a much more doable affair.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the main reason why I wasn't surprised that the Final Fantasy VII Remake had Midgar as one entire game, because it felt like it could hold that.
Mm-hmm.
With a bit of expansion work, but it was self-contained enough that you could tell a story within it. And then go, okay, and here's how the story's going to continue. Next game.
The other thing that would make 6 in particular uniquely unsuited to this format is its tendency to not focus on any one character or place for very long, which makes it a pain in the ass to like figure out what this like rejiggered narrative arc looks like. But and the third and final reason
that's
is
why
just,
that's why like the second act split narrative is it would have to be its own section if you're splitting it that much to begin with.
It'd
be like three miniature RPGs.
Yeah, it's pure pain. But and like the last point I would want to get onto is just like you know, like 7 Rebirth, despite all the acclaim, has sold worse than 7 Remake because like a lot of the initial excitement came with the first remake finally happening. And I'm sure that, like, a lot of additional excitement will show up when it's like, it's finished, you can buy all 3 of them in a pack, and Square is charging, like, I don't know, $80 for it. Like, that will sell a lot, that'll do numbers. Like, the other thing that's going to draw them away from the concept is just, like, okay, the biggest one, the one that could potentially do the most numbers, just showed that, like, after the initial one, there's just not nearly as much appetite from a casual fan base. And 6 doesn't have a casual fan base. It has a hardcore fan base. Like, there's basically no such thing as just, like, an FF6 fan who can be normal about it.
That's true. It's very true.
So, like, this, the premise of a split 6 remake simply doesn't make sense. And I don't think, literally I don't think any of them can. Like, the thing that, like, they've been hinting at this point is that the 7 remake team is just going to go off and make 17. I think they want to go back to a point where they can have multiple mainline games in production. Because they've realized
that was the smarter strategy way back then.
Yes, that used to be the standard, like, have multiples of these. And, like, ultimately, it's what needs to be happening because they've, you know, as they've brought up publicly, children, like, anyone under 30 doesn't have a lot of Final Fantasy nostalgia. They've been strip mining Final Fantasy nostalgia. Well, like, you know, you could go from, like, if Final Fantasy mainline games only come out, like, once every 8 years, you might see 1, maybe 2, when you're theoretically the target audience for them. So, you know, you need to be pushing those, they need to be pushing out, like, real Final Fantasy game more often, and yeah, like, I suspect 17 will probably try to reuse as much of the technology from 7 Remake as possible, because that's what makes sense to do.
And they know how it works. They know that it works. They know that it looks reasonably good.
And they have a team that works very well together. And they have built their technology in such a way that they can move from... They built their technology in such a way that it can scale from, like, low-spec computers, Steam Deck, Switch 2, all the way to whatever the newest thing is. And that is also going to be a very key thing that they need for FF17 to be. Like, they can't just put it on whatever Sony's new console is and expect that to sell to the audience that they need it to sell to. Like, that is the brutal lesson that they learned from 16 and 7 Rebirth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was also going to say that 7 made sense to do all that with because it already had a whole universe built around it, because you already had Crisis Core, Dirge of Cerberus, Advent Children. So I think that was the smart one to do a remake with, and I don't know that any other Final Fantasy game has that level of recognition. And not to mention that you
could do it with 10.
Right. Not to mention that you also had Cloud, Aerith, Yuffie showing up in Kingdom Hearts and that sort of thing. So
you could do it with 13.
You could, and I keep pushing for a 13 remaster, despite the fact that the Series X runs it in 4K and it looks gorgeous.
Like the thing that's probably continually holding back a 13 remaster is that like the engine that powers 13 is infamously just a humongous piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like they spent so long. Like initially they announced it as like White Engine. And then it was when the game came out, it was Crystal Tools, and that ended up powering Dragon Quest X, Final Fantasy XIV 1.0, and FF13. Yes, not like 14 doesn't run well. Dragon Quest X's demands are entirely different, and it was for an entirely different platform. Like that was a Wii game, and you know 13, like the developers could not figure out what they were making. So, like, this engine that was meant to power essentially all of Square's games at the time ended up powering nothing but 13 sequels. It was bad. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, like, I personally don't think that there's much chance of this ever happening, but yes, if you gave it to me, someone who does not is entirely lukewarm on FF6, I would bifurcate it, expand and move events into the world of Ruin that were perhaps some of which were previously like character beats in the world of Balance, and like nip and tuck and change things until like you had two games.
Honestly, I might even low-key hire a couple fanfiction writers who really liked certain characters and said, see what extra stuff you could put in for these characters.
Please figure out something for Umaro.
Yeah. Oh no, I mean, I'm also thinking like the strained and largely implied family dynamic between Shadow Realm and her grandpa.
Yeah, there's like, that is the other thing, is that you would want to expand a bunch of these things, because like a lot of these characters will essentially have three scenes. Something that sets up what their character is, something that gives them like a little scene to chew on in mid-game, and then like a resolution to their character arc.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like I said, Final Fantasy VI has definitely a hardcore fan base, and that means that there's been decades of speculation on different characters. There's been, I don't even want to go onto Archive of Our Own to see how many different fics there are. I'm sure it's a small library in itself. But that is an area that they would definitely need to work on. And there's no way they're going to please everybody with this, but they would have to at least attempt to provide more characterization, more motivation, and better resolution for most of the cast.
Someone writes a game's worth of dialogue to try to sort out Siegfried and fake Siegfried.
Yeah. Or like, what was Lone Wolf doing there? But no, I mean,
I think a lot
was Gogo actually Setzer's old girlfriend?
Not Daryl, goddammit. One thing I will say is, like, I'm now remembering, like, there's a very good, like, series of articles on Legends of Localization that's going through all of the localizations of FF6. The two official ones, a Google Translate, like, just circa when the articles were written, and a fan translation from way back in the day. And I'm stuck on Siegfried and fake Siegfried simply because that fan translation decided to translate Ore-sama as Mr. Me. Which is an incredible choice.
Yeah. Weird. I just, I remember having to, playing through Final Fantasy VI on Game Boy Advance and finally realizing exactly where they got Gao's Mr. Thou.
Yes, that one's fascinating.
Because I originally assumed it was just him hearing Cyan going Nushi, like Onushi for a second person pronoun, and completely missing what it was supposed to mean. But No, in fact, it was Cyan using the more archaic and formal Bozaru for to be as a popula. And him and Gao hearing Gozadar as Sadru or monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, he just assumed that Cyan was calling Saban a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed.
So. Yeah, any of those things that, like, for the layman like me among us, like, those things where, like, something happened in F6 and you're like, why the fuck was that? There's at least 70 to 80% chance that those Legends of Localizations articles will have called it out. You'll get some sort of explanation about what was going on there.
Yep. So, yeah. And, I mean, just a lot of it was just random Wilsey-isms just to make the text more interesting, because direct translation of Japanese dialogue to English often sounds very dry and dull because we're used to hearing some really random stuff in regular use. Like the sheer amount of vocabulary based on Greek mythology in English language, which has no direct counterpart outside of the Indo-European group. So, things, yeah. Or just stuff like Son of a Submariner. There's, like, I'm pretty sure the Japanese version was simply Bastard.
Yeah, it's just curses.
Yeah. Or go Final Fantasy IV's Spoony Bard.
Mm.
And all Tella says there is Kisama, which is, again, simply, if you just look it up in the dictionary, he just says you, but it's the specific second person pronoun that would translate better as you bastard.
It is a second person pronoun you would not use on that you didn't vehemently dislike.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, for a Quora post, I once made a list of all the second-person pronouns in Japanese and got to... It's like, okay, here's number 5. This is the last one that you will ever likely hear actually in use, and it's the only one, the last one you will ever want to use yourself.
Number Deep 5 out of 15, oh my.
By the way. Number 5 out of 15. So, because if you go into manga, you find a lot of these things.
Yeah, I was going to say, how deep into the list was oh my?
Oh my, that was like 3 or 4. So. I mean, oh my is a lot more common than that. Actually, no, wait a minute. Okay, so. I think I counted Anta as part of Anata, so yeah.
I would assume that was considered.
Teme. Okay, so maybe Kisama was number 6. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Teme is another one that's pretty rude.
Oh, it's very rude. It was noted as, you know, this is technically the one that the gang members use. So, yeah. And then below that was stuff like Nushi. I mean, Onushi. And mm-hmm. Otaku. Which yeah. I have met people who use Otaku, non-ironically, as a mm-hmm. second-person pronoun. It's just that's not what most people think of when they hear it anymore.
Yeah, you have to be in a very specific situation for someone to immediately think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Okay.
Questions from Fire Miner in the chat. We should probably hit us a few of those.
Yeah, that's what
I was going to say. Going back to pronouns, just for one funnier moment. Several years ago, for 1 year. The high school I work at had this one textbook that the 11th grade was using. It was basically essay and questions related to it, like just 2 pages per unit. And one of these units was on connotation versus denotation, which is already like, how are we explaining this to a bunch of high school students who don't necessarily care or who don't have necessarily the knowledge in Japanese to understand what this is supposed to be in some cases. And so the way I ended up explaining it to a bunch of high school jocks was, first of all, like, okay guys, how do you say you in Japanese? And I got like 3 answers. So it's like, okay, yeah, we got these. Okay, got Anata, Kimi Omae. And then I started listing a couple more, and got to Kisama and they just started laughing. I'm like, yeah, exactly, right? So, denotation. This is in the dictionary. These are all you. Technically, they all mean the same thing, correct? Connotation is knowing that they do not mean the same thing.
You would never use them for that.
So, and okay. And going on with, and this is why we need to be very careful when we're using internet translation software, because internet translation software has no concept of connotation. So, yeah.
Okay. So let's hit some of the live ones, and then we'll hit Strawberry Eggs.
Okay, because of the war situation and price, these are all from FireMiner, by the way. The Saudis have been withdrawing capital from unprofitable ventures like the Live Golf Tour. They want actual returns on
that. That was the 40. That was like the 45 golf, 54 golf tour. Right?
Yeah,
LIV is 54 in Roman numerals.
Okay. My bad. The question is just how profitable. The question is just how profitable EA is right now.
Like, they're consistent because, like, they'll be releasing an EA Football Club and a Madden every year. Like, that's kind of what we were getting at, and I'm sure this is what this responds to, but there's not really a lot of growth there.
Yeah.
And, there's some other stuff in the portfolio that, like, theoretically, if they could get their ducks in a row and revive it in a way that would, like, please both their new masters and fan base, they could make money off of it. Like, The Sims has been dormant for many years other than stuff for 4. That could theoretically produce a lot of money, but, like, I don't think that the EA that exists would be capable of turning it into a real game.
They're probably also going to try and microtransaction the hell out of those sports games some more.
Oh yeah, they're gonna like go into Turbo Drive.
Can you further monetize this?
I don't know, but I have a feeling it's not gonna go over very well.
If you've ever looked at like Ultimate Team, like that's the thing that they're going to just like jacking things up. Mm-hmm. Does anyone here know about Ultimate Team? Sorry if I'm about to explain it to you.
Yes.
No.
So, the sports games now, FIFA and Madden, they have Ultimate Team is, like, just this entire, like, gacha gambling malware that exists of just trying to play football games online. You can spend ungodly sums if you truly want to. They are, like, definitely going to try to find ways to squeeze that hard. Because that's the goose where the eggs come from, and so you've got to squeeze it harder and see if you can wring out more eggs. But yeah, like the issue they'll run into is that there's not really additional sports that they can do this with. I'm trying to think of like super internationally popular sports, or at least popular enough in their primary markets of like the US and Europe, that they could try to produce another sports game that they could do this with, and I don't think it's possible. The return of the like legit football game, like the EA Sports College Football franchise, I mean theoretically that turns into it, but I think that just ends up splitting the Madden audience. I don't think it creates a bunch of additional money. What other sports are internationally popular enough in the markets that they like can sell in, and I'm drawing a blank. There's just nothing there. There's no
rugby.
More blood than
that.
Lacrosse.
It's very international. Okay. It's definitely popular in places. Cricket,
yeah,
if you
I mean,
can
cricket.
Sell that in India.
Yeah,
I mean, like half of South Asia. Yeah.
Yeah, but not in markets that EA sells to.
Yet.
Like the, yeah. I mean, good luck breaking into it is all I'll say.
Yeah.
Yeah, like cricket would theoretically be the thing to try to expand into, but like they would basically be forced to sell it only
all bets, yeah.
It would kind of have to only be on PC and mobile. Like there's not like the console penetration in those areas just isn't very high, and it's not likely to get any higher given the current prices. Like yeah. It basically, and you know, it would have to be built very differently from the way they build all their other stuff. So maybe they could get that online in 4 or 5 years after initial league licensing negotiations, actual engine development, like customizing something that like will work on the target platforms, and then like market research for how much money you can actually get, because they're very popular, but they're also in places that like have less buying power, which is why EA has been reluctant to move there in the first place. Like there's just all sorts of just fucking stupid. Hit another one.
Rip EA.
Yeah, no, that shit's over.
There's news that someone with 470 hours in Battlefield 6 got refunded by Steam because EA removed some game modes. Certain people are freaking out because they're afraid it may create a precedence. Precedence for the refund or precedence for removing the modes? I'm not sure what.
I would suspect that's precedent for removing the. I would suspect precedent for the refund. Like, it's. What I would say is that, like, few enough things qualify for that that I don't. This is a major concern. Like, especially live service games cycle things in and out all the time. We don't hear about this happening that often. I think that you will probably see this come up, but it will be a rare. It will not be a consistent thing because. Valve moderation and refunding outside of the 2-hour window is extremely inconsistent, so no, it's a crazy world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crazy world. Play more indie games.
Refund them.
I'm trying.
Yes, don't refund indie games even if you don't like them, please.
Like you spent $15 on it. Spent like $10, $15 on this. I don't care if you just didn't end up gelling with it. You didn't risk a lot to begin
with. No, I mean, this has been a thing with ebooks for years now. Just occasionally there will be a TikTok trend for like getting an ebook and then refunding it immediately.
Hmm. And now I'm remembering.
It's only ever happened to me once, but it's still really annoying.
It just feels shitty. But yeah, now I'm remembering that time that a TikTok trend was trying to pass bad checks.
Why?
Why?
Because it's free money.
No. That's not how any of this fucking works.
Okay.
We're all going to turn into angry old men can trick
other people into getting into trouble and then they can laugh at
Yeah, them. That's probably what that was.
We're all going to be shaking our fists at clouds in the not too distant future, aren't we?
Jay Carter, boy.
Yes, the basically it was check kiting, as it's more properly known.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get the exact mechanics of how they were doing this. Okay. What was the exact mechanics of? It's pain to actually find this amongst all the chaff. Yes, you would. You would write a bad check, deposit in an ATM, withdraw based on the check. For it was properly deposited, and your bank would bounce it. It was just fraud. It was just normal fraud. But
basically, a more modern version of the checking fraud, where you would be writing a check from a bank on the other side of the country, and by the time in the month that it took for the check to get mailed there, it bounced and come back as bounced, you'd be away with the money already.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Remember seeing that on the fridge.
Yeah. This was just normal. Like, we have, like, every so often, like, you know, teenagers and 20-somethings find out about something that's existed forever and think that they've found a new glitch.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay.
This reminds me, speaking of feeling old, I saw somewhere on Blue Sky someone complaining about the whole physical game situation, and someone just replying with the old man yelling at a cloud and just getting angry at this and just realizing that replying would just make it worse.
It would. I mean,
technically we are old guys getting angry at the cloud, but yes.
Yes, it's true. I will briefly mention the post I was making on Blue Sky there's been a tendency in response to Sony's like decision to respond strictly to the argument they presented that physical is significantly less popular than digital and that therefore they feel no need to serve it. And what like the true madness of that, and part of why people are getting as pissed as they are, is that they something away, and they didn't pretend to give an explanation for why you were better off now that they had taken an option away from you. There was no promise that digital would somehow get better because physical had been taken away. It was just, fuck you. Microsoft, at their most deranged, in 2013, they just announced that every Xbox One game was going to need to have an online check-in every 24 hours.
Yep.
Their fundamental argument at the time was, like, the thing that they used to try to make that seem better was, well, we'll be giving you more access to share your digital copies. Like, it'll be more possible to loan out a digital copy because of the setup that we're making as part of this 24-hour check-in. They were at least trying to pretend that you were getting something in. And Sony's argument has given... Sony has not presented an argument. They've just said, this is a small enough market that we don't care. Like, that fundamentally means that even if you have no intention of ever purchasing another physical game, they're still not making things better for you. They're just dicking over people that don't want to go digital.
Mm-hmm.
And, like... Yes, I get what their reasons are for that, because it makes things cheaper for them. They get a lot more money off of a digital sale. But they need to at least pretend that they're giving you something in return. And they seem profoundly disinterested. Okay, I want to hit this strawberry eggs question, because it's like right down the pipe for a sicko like me.
Okay.
Okay, so strawberry eggs, thank you for the question. Always lovely. I can think of two games that started as RPGs. Were reworked into entirely different genres. One is Animal Crossing. It was first conceived as a dungeon crawler for the N64 DD. The peripheral was delayed and ultimately failed. The game was reworked into the life sim it is today. Other game is Banjo-Kazooie. It first started as an SNES RPG called Project Dream, which then moved to the N64, then reworked entirely into a 3D platform. Other games do you know about that had similar stories? It could be the opposite, started as a different genre, then got reworked into an RPG.
I'm going to go with probably the oldest possible answer here and say Dungeons & Dragons.
Originally a war game.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be like a module for a war game called, I think it was Chainmail.
It's Chainmail.
Chainmail. And it was just like...
It was like the small skirmish module instead of the giant...
Small skirmish. And people started getting attached to the characters that they were making, and the absolute original base D&D, like so early that they were getting it done at a print shop, indie style game rules basically assumed that once you hit level 10, you would be upgraded to Lord, and then you would be, the entire game would shift over to chainmail. So,
yeah, those early D&D rule sets are truly bizarre.
Yes. I mean, they didn't get much less bizarre as the years went on, but...
Yeah, but they, like, some of those early ones, like, you'll even see into, like, D&D 3 and beyond some of the weirder things, like, situation where, like, I think it's humans can dual class and non-humans can multi-class, and those are somehow different things. which is, like, one of those remnants from, like, really early D&D where, like, if you were an elf, that was also your class. Your job is elf.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, the non-human types were classes. They weren't really ethnic.
Yes, like because like you had, yeah, you had a certain part of the writing group that like produced this that wanted Lord of the Rings, and you had a certain part that wanted Conan. And so the compromise was that...
Just note that Gygax, when he was asked to, or when he and his friend started making up this module, he did not know what Lord of the Rings was originally. So, he was introduced to Lord of the Rings as part of the suggestion that they come up with a fantasy version of a Napoleon like war game. all sorts of things in there. Just sort of going back to the rules, and you see things like how it was very obviously supposed to be guild based originally, where
warriors would have followers and shit.
Well, not just that, but like any week's game was a dungeon delve based around who was available at the time. And downtime between adventures was based on how many actual days, happened between this character doing something.
There's a very funny bit in like the earliest rule books where like the GM, which I think at the time was just referred to as the referee, it was like listed that they should probably not have more than 15 people group. Which... Just imagine DMing a table of 50.
They were not all playing at the same time.
Yeah. But
it's just like pickup games every week.
Yeah. But still very funny to even imagine a 15-person table. Combat would never resolve.
No. But other than that, the other thing that really came to mind was actually Puyo Puyo.
Mm-hmm. Technically, the Mono Monogatari games continued to happen, but yes, like Puyo swallowed that franchise.
Yeah. Swallowed it to the point that when Compile broke away from Sega and took Mono Monogatari with them, they couldn't use any of the characters from Mono Monogatari. Because they were Puyo
because
characters.
Sega had kept Puyo.
Yeah.
That one's really, really fascinating. To me, like, because it's as it would be the equivalent of if like there had been a puzzle spin-off to Dragon Quest and we all just played Slime. Yeah.
No, Itadaki Street.
Yes, like if Itadaki Street had just completely subsumed Dragon Quest, and there was like very occasionally someone would release another a remake of an old Dragon as a curio, like 7 people would buy it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the Puyo's
were fine. Those are the two things that came to mind when I read that question originally. So what were you thinking of?
I've got like a million of these, but like RPG is not necessarily what all of them are doing. Like when you look at these torture projects, a lot of times like they'll turn into very strange things. So anyone here, like, does anyone here remember playing Pokemon Snap? Like the original Pokemon Snap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen it.
When you start that game up, before you get anything else, the game will list like Project Jack and B. Because when it started, it was a 64 DD specific, like, hardening thing that, like a Jack and the Beanstalk derived gardening simulator that used the N64 DD's like capacity to rewrite and to rewrite the media and to like keep track of timer, like how many days it had been. And somehow that ultimately, through multiple painful like redesigns, turned into a Pokemon game where you take pictures.
Wow.
I do not remember if they were ever particularly public about what precisely happened there, other than that eventually they said, you should add Pokemon, that would be fun. but yes, the only remnants of that is that the game references Project Jack and Bean when you start it up. One Wheels would be familiar with is that Halo was initially pitched as an RTS.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like back when it was called Monkey Nuts, it was an RTS. Before spending some time as a third person shooter before turning into a first person shooter. Like this kind of thing just sort of happened a lot back in the day because just like prototyping things didn't. Oh, here's another one. Quake was originally an RPG.
Quake,
the id Software FPS game, is referenced as one of their upcoming projects in, like, one of their Commander Keen games, and it's like, oh, it's going to be a 2D RPG where you play as the great warrior Quake. And, it like, Quake was something to do with the id tabletop RPGs that they were playing at the time. Like their D&D session. But Quake, over the course of many years and like project redirection, turned into an extremely important and innovative 3D FPS. this kind of thing just used to happen a lot. Like, just because, like, if you canceled a game that was 3/4 of the way through development, you had wasted 9 months instead of 4 years. But yeah, like a lot of I'm sure that like as I think about it, I will pull more out of my hat as like things come flooding back to me. Mario Sunshine originally was like them fucking around with a prototype that eventually became the inspiration for Splatoon, because it was just like a game where you could run around a 3D environment and spray paint on things and then wash it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, like, Mario got added into it. And then, like, because Mario was in it, it turned into a, like, 3D platformer. There's a lot of these. If you look through that era, Nintendo is also especially prone to it, because they'll like come up with a game idea and then wrap an existing character around it, and then like that character's prior stuff will influence the direction they take the current thing.
Ooh.
But yeah, like those are some of the ones that immediately come to mind as like started as an almost entirely unrelated product. But yes, to expand on her own examples, yes, Project Dream started as a became Banjo-Kazooie, started as a Super Nintendo RPG, kind of a Zelda-y thing where you played as like a kid named Edison who was trying to save his sister from pirates. And then like they introduced this like bear friend named Banjo who ultimately proved to be more charming than Edison, so they just kind of threw Edison into a trash can. And if you look at the videos that came with Rare Replay, they're probably on YouTube by this point. You can see some like prototype footage of Banjo-Kazooie when it's still like a 2.5D platformer that's like, or like an overhead platformer that's very simple. And ultimately it turns into like it becomes a platformer because like that's more what Rare was used to making. And then it turns into what it is because they're struggling with finding a direction for it. And then eventually they look over at the Conker game being made and it's like, oh, that's turning out really well. We should make something that looks more like that. And then because they do that so quickly, their game finishes before Conker, and now Conker doesn't have a director. And that's why Conker sits in development limbo for 4 years before coming out as like a South Park inspired thing.
Yeah.
Oh, what a memory.
But yeah, like these kinds of things happen a lot when a game could be made by 10 people over the course of a year. it's much harder to do this now just because any direction that you're committing to had to go through layers of publisher, and like, so you'll see a lot of changes in direction in terms of like everyone knows we're making an RPG, but they don't all agree on what kind of RPG we're making, as opposed to I came back one day and suddenly it was a racing game. This isn't the same thing, but it's really funny, and I don't have another good way to bring it up. Is anyone here aware of extremely old shooter Time Pilot?
Nope.
Okay, so Time Pilot was you can purchase this now. It is available as like an arcade archive. And it was published by Konami, and it was made by well-known later to be Capcom designer Yoshiki Okamoto. And during development, so he pitched Time Pilot and his boss said no. So his boss was like, no, you're going to go make a racing. So Okamoto dead made Time Pilot and kept telling his boss lies about the racing game he was making. Well, Time Pilot was finished and there wasn't much of a choice. Like, well, fine, release it. And that's just very funny to me. Like, the level of hands-off that someone's boss could be, that they spent, like, 6 months making a game and just listening to reports that say, yeah, the racing game's coming along just fine, boss, while they made a completely unrelated game.
And then they didn't get fired afterwards.
They did leave afterwards, but they didn't get fired, as far as I can tell.
Okay. Have you heard of a Canadian novel called J-Pod?
I think I've heard the name, but that'd be it.
Well, part of the plot of J-Pod is that the main character and his friends, or co-workers at least, all have names starting with J and have all been put into the same micro department of this Vancouver-based software company where they're not quite sure what they're doing at a given time, but they're technically supposed to be making a game, except their, I'm going to say, coked-up manager is constantly changing ideas of what it should be. Possibly as a last-ditch attempt to try and reconnect with his estranged son after the divorce, that kind of thing. And so they're dealing with the chaos of this all through the book, among other ridiculous shenanigans, and they basically create a shadow game within the game that is, instead of cute little Timmy the Tortoise skateboarding, it's like maniacal evil Ronald McDonald the Demon chasing things. And predictably, by the end of the game, this comes out, and it actually ends up becoming the published game. So, just came to mind. Read the book. It's actually a pretty weird, good book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just that was the kind of situation it was in. It was a bunch of programmers with a long list of mutually inapplicable goals attempting their best to do something and then just going, screw it, we're going to sabotage everything from within, and somehow that works.
Okay, but yeah, we will potentially come back to this question if I think of more that fit the build. There's definitely a lot rattling around in my brain, but we should probably hit check if Fireminer has current questions, and if not, move into the back.
He does. He has. There's one comment here. He says the case with the Battlefield 6 refund. The person who got it bought the deluxe edition of the game on launch day. It may have been another factor leading to Steam's decision. And then he has another question. Bandai Entertainment's latest report said that while they only experienced a marginal increase in profitability, Digimon is the most profitable it's been since 2000. A lot of this has to do with having a great game like Digimon Time Strangers. The question is that will Bandai allocate enough money and manpower to make more Digimon games instead of waiting for 7 years for a new one? Digimon fans are speculating that for the upcoming franchise anniversary, Bandai will probably re-release the 3DS games onto modern platforms.
Their strategy with Digimon has always been super scattershot. I mean, remember when they followed up the Cyber Sleuth games with Survive, a game that somehow took 5 years to make?
Yeah.
So,
which is basically a digital novel, right?
It's primarily a visual novel with some light tactical RPG combat. It's very much like, oh, this went through hell. Oh, I don't know how, but it did. But yeah, Bandai as a company, has a very loose understanding of the relationship between quality and sales, especially when it comes to Digimon. So, while I would suspect there will be a Time Stranger 2, I don't trust that to mean that there, or a follow-up, you know what I mean? I don't trust that thing for the quality of Digimon going forward outside of that.
Oh, speaking of games that started out as other things, Digimon starting out as Tamagotchi, but how about we make it more for boys?
Yep, Digimon definitely started out as Tamagotchi, but we think that this will have more appeal.
And that's exactly
to boys.
How it started out, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why Tamagotchi and Digimon have the same number of mutation steps.
Mm-hmm. It really is just Tamagotchi. They just changed all the pictures and then started
now
adding
they're fighting
stuff
instead of being
it.
Friends.
Yep.
Okay. But yeah. Given the franchise has gone through several highs and many lows, so I don't have faith in any consistency, but I suspect that this will be one of the better times for Digimon fans going forward. Next question.
Well, that was it for the live questions. We can go back to Farmer's questions from last week that we didn't get to. It's like a continuation of something, so I don't know what this was a follow-up on. There's also something to be said about how virtual YouTubers made gaming on PC and smartphones more popular in Japan. You can stream from consoles, but when you also have to interact with your viewers, streaming from PC or smartphones is easier.
Streaming as a whole definitely has affected the perception of PC gaming in Japan, just by dint of Yeah, if you wanted to stream, you needed to have a PC, set up in some capacity. And if you want to, that raises awareness of as an option and helps it It makes the PC more associated with games in a way that it hadn't been for a while there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fair point.
Next thing. American and European, to a lesser extent, car companies have forgotten to make affordable and reliable cars. They found out instead of having to work out the economy of making a cheap car at scale, it's easier to just make big pickup trucks with several limited editions to make as much money from rich people. I see the same thing with video games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saturated markets tend to do that. You see the most that you can make, and then you decide, well, how can I squeeze more out of that? And as it turns out, the rich guy who is absolutely terrified about the implications of the size of his penis is a very exploitable market.
The high-end luxury market.
That's the polite way of putting
it. Yes, I mean, I'm trying to put it politely, yes. But yeah, just the end of the market where it doesn't matter how much you actually spent making the thing, you can still get several thousand times what you spent in just profit just by selling it to the right person.
There's
the right spiel.
Yes, there is a lot of money to be made in selling things with more money than sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. And cards and identity signifier, people will spend a lot on things that reify their self-perception and identity. Let's see. So yes, fair point and well argued. Fortnite and Roblox have the advantage of the microtransaction mechanism built right into them. Minecraft doesn't have. I wonder if Mojang and Microsoft are racking their brains to find a way to make it possible. Those three games are definitely going to be forever games, just like Tetris.
I have to disagree with him on this. I mentioned it on chat. I don't know if you saw it last week, but Minecraft has a whole in-game store for purchasing mods and skins and other stuff. Ooh. Built into the game. Yes.
It does not have the, do not underestimate how evil Roblox is.
I have seen it firsthand.
Yeah. Minecraft is definitely, well monetized and, making plenty of money. But the way that Roblox makes money is frightening and evil. Mm-hmm. And also their stock took a huge hit because they mildly missed an expectation, despite still being insanely profitable. I'm not sure how forever some of these are. Fortnite, I think, is the most vulnerable to not really being a forever game.
Yeah.
It definitely feels like its stature has been falling, and one of the ways they would juice it before is that they would cross it over with something, but they've run out of big money crossover.
Yes.
Yeah, what haven't they crossed over? Jeez.
I don't know.
Sonic is the latest rumor.
My brain is now imagining really funny, desperate Fortnite. Not even desperate, but nonsensical ones. Imagining the Beverly Hills at least. You know what? Both of those at the same time.
I mean, the Beverly Hillbillies would be more interesting, but yeah.
I'm imagining, Jed Clampett can shoot, and sometimes it will cause an oil spring, which you can use to build buildings faster. Fortnite's confusing.
But you can play without building it now.
Yep. Now it can just be a shoot.
Wow. What an idea.
What a country.
As I can say, right now they're trying, the whole thing is they're trying to make it so you can bring your Fortnite skins to other Unreal Engine games. I guess that's how they're kind of trying to now.
Yeah, that's kind of their Unreal Engine 6 pitch. Yeah, I don't see that having a ton of, like, there's just not a lot of incentive for users on that part. Like, developers might have slightly more incentive, but I don't think it fixes the problem.
No. It does not.
Cycle, especially with shooters. Once Halo was on top of the world.
Rip Halo.
Yep. Rip Halo. You can only make some money from mods by the Bethesda Creation Store. I'm willing to bet the margin of selling skins is higher if you can manage them. Yeah, skins are probably the real maker with Minecraft. People love custom skins in Minecraft. There's a bazillion and a half of them, and the cost versus like
they're much cheaper. That's the other thing about any of these other games.
They are cheap to make, and they essentially make money perpetual.
Yeah.
If there's anything else in the current chat, and if not, let's call it a night. My throat is killing me.
Sure. looks like he added one more. We'll hit this thing called a night. I previously asked about whether people complained less were Final Fantasy VII Remake not called a remake. A similar debate is going on with Shinobi Art of Vengeance. People expected a normal action platformer, instead got a Metroidvania. The CEO of the studio making Art of Vengeance then said on a podcast that they couldn't have made a normal Shinobi game, but it wasn't the kind of game that they wanted to make. The question is, did the PS2 Shinobi or the Xbox Ninja Gaiden ever arouse this kind of furor from old fans of their prospective franchise?
Probably not.
They weren't. I don't recall it, but at the same time, like, retro enthusiasts were not a large market at this point. But, like, I'm going to be real with you. A game, like, a remake of something like FF7, never going to not have a contingent complaining about it.
Yeah.
If they had made the game that people claim they want, it would just be like, well, why'd you make this same thing again?
It'd be the same way people complain about Disney remakes. Like why does this exist?
Yeah, like it's the like I would be the one lodging those complaints. Like the artless make something more like technically expensive is just like it's a crowd pleaser for a very specific loud crowd, but. Like it's not a long-term business solution.
No.
Like we're seeing the end of that with Disney because they've run out of like a lot of the remakes, the live-action remakes they were doing were essentially like millennial and Gen Z nostalgia, and they've run out.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't per se the desire for a remake, it was the desire to remember things they had seen before.
Hmm.
And that's ultimately what a lot of these people that like say, well, you need a faithful remake. You want to remember a thing you've seen before.
The thing is, you still have videos and DVDs, you can still see it.
I mean, they can't
see it the way that they saw it originally because they're no longer 5 or 6 years old.
And they've seen prettier graphics.
Ultimately, those Disney remakes look worse than the originals, so, you know.
Yeah. It's because
I would give Cinderella a pass just because Cinderella did a good job of expanding on some characters.
They added things to that. Like, that's an actual remake.
Yeah, they
like
actually...
the Aladdin one.
I mean, the Aladdin one took things in different directions. That's fine. I still prefer Robin Williams, but it's still good. The Cinderella live action actually gave stepmom characterization and motivations, and also I liked Helena Bonham Carter as the godmother. She was just hilarious. But but I mean, most of them. I mean, the Beauty and the Beast live action remake was a near shot for the cartoon with a few added scenes.
But somehow an hour longer.
Yes, somehow.
And like they added
the
nothing.
The Lion King live action was honestly less realistic than the cartoon version.
Okay. Also live also action bad. Only by the barest of technicalities. Yes.
And it's also oh, bad.
It was I mean, wasn't even it wasn't even technically live action, it's just living
that.
Lions can emote better through their faces than the CGI lions did in that movie.
I had to endure that twice in theaters. I fell asleep.
Do you watch Mufasa, The Lion King?
I don't want to talk about it.
Only by yeah. accident because it was playing somewhere I was at working.
The music is fine given the composer, but that's about it. So all I will say.
Yeah. But yeah, like a remake that makes no changes. Like I've brought it up before. Like go look up the like actual critical reaction to something like Go 1998, which is a fascinating like study by its director to be like, even if I do my best to recreate this, it's still going to be different because the context for it is different. There is something different behind the camera and that changes what was made. Yeah, it produced like a shot for shot remake that still feels infinitely worse than the original.
Yep.
Yeah, so the attempt to preserve an original in amber that fails the purpose of the original and fails the purpose of a remake. If you wanted the original, you should have just like brought about a version of the original that works on modern platforms. The attempt to separate out and say that the graphics, the art direction, are somehow wholly distinct from every other part is deranged. A truly impoverished way to look at art.
Hold on, Fireminer. Yeah. I think we answered that. Maybe you missed it. Fireminer's yelling at us because we didn't answer it. He says we're asking about completely different sequels, not remakes. And I think we kind of I think we kind of brushed past that because there wasn't much negative reaction to the new Ninja Gaiden and new Shinobi on PS2.
Yes, like in part that's more just because like there, like we brought this up briefly, but the like the retro scene just wasn't anywhere near what it is. Like the desire to see something that brought forth like the notion of an old game but ignored its play mechanics was actually not uncommon because it was seen as like, well, you have to progress these into 3D at the time. That was a prevailing belief. So
I remember only positive about 3D Ninja Gaiden, honestly.
Yeah, and 3D Shinobi was criticized primarily for its like its own like weirdness and kind of low budgetness, but what I would say in response to this question is that, like, the context was very different because, like, the audience for those remakes, like, those sequels slash remakes, like, at the time, Ninja Gaiden sort of sure looked like it was just a remake. It was not clear how it, that it was technically a prequel to NES games by a very convoluted way, but, like, at the time, like, you have to remember that the target audience for those wasn't really old enough to feel nostalgic in, like, the Puritan sense. It was more just like, oh, I remember that from when I was a kid. Because, like, if you had played Ninja Gaiden when you were a child in, like, 1988, we'll go with 88. Let's say your older end of the demographic, you were 10 in 1988. It's now 2004. That's 16 years later. You're 26. You're not that nostalgic. You want a reinterpretation of your of the thing from when you were a child that tells you that you are now an adult and you play things for adults. The response to this was, yes, finally Ninja Gaiden has been brought into 3D. Like, there was essentially no controversy here. Because the state of the industry in the early 2000s was, we must complete the transition to 3D. Like, these things that have been in 2D need to move on. But, like, the notion of this is disloyal to the franchise was much less common at the time, especially in the 2D to 3D Switch. It starts to reappear in the late 2000s, like 2008. You start to see people being like, well, this doesn't play enough like the old game. Because, like, now, those old games are now 20 years into the rear view. And children who grew up with them are now nostalgic. And starting to look at them in a more venerating fashion. Like, this is... like, they don't make them like the... You kind of have to be about 30 before you start really grinding into they don't make them like the youth.
I wonder if some of the negative reaction like he's talking about to the Shinobi, the new Shinobi, may have been related to just seeing the new 2D Ninja Gaiden being more true to those original games and being jealous.
I mean, maybe, but I'm going to be real with you. I didn't see that next.
Yeah, I didn't see negativity to either of those games, really.
Like to undercut my own point, I am sure that there were people that were like, Ninja Gaiden's a platformer, not an action game, and were disappointed by these. But also, like, the internet was, like, the places you would complain about that are message boards that don't exist anymore and had little audience at the time. So, while I'm sure those people existed, they were much less loud. Because there was much less places to see the complaints they were making. This kind of person has always existed. And will always exist. So I'm sure that there were people pissed off. I also don't think that they made up a meaningful amount of people playing these new games at that. Who saw a cool ninja game and were like, hell yeah, let's play the cool new ninja game. See, also, I'm sure there were people upset by Prince of Persia the Sands of Time, but
yeah,
the amount of people for whom that mattered was very small.
So I vaguely remember some people getting upset about Prince of Persia Sands of Time, and there were most people who were big fans of the earlier games in the series, but as a proportion of the entire series fandom, they were a much smaller group.
Yeah. Like, that was the other thing, is that a lot of these things were being revived.
Or you know, similar to some of the reactions to Fallout 3 or New Vegas or 4 from the fandom that started with the original Fallout 2. Different games. They're not necessarily better or worse games, but to hear some of the diehard fans of Fallout 2, then Fallout 3 was, like, absolute hell. Heresy, end of the world stuff.
I'm going to actually
group of them.
I'm going to do you one better. There were Fallout 1 fans who refused to accept the changes that had been made to Fallout 2. Those games came out a year apart.
I wasn't online when that one happened, so I wasn't paying attention there. But yeah,
no, it's very funny. Those games came out a year apart, and. One of them is literally built on top of the other.
Had a big enough fandom to do that. Oh, no.
Yes, the Fallout fandom was already iconoclastic enough to be pissed off that things were too different for Fallout 2. They had screwed up the tone of the writing, and therefore Fallout 2 was no sequel worthy of anyone's time.
Well, how did they react to Fallout Tactics then? And then that Fallout...
Oh, they hated it. They hated it so goddamn much.
Absolutely hated it.
What was the Fallout Diablo-like game called?
Brotherhood of Steel.
Yes, that's
which is not to be confused. Not to be confused with Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel. But Fallout Tactics, they had...
I mean, there's a reason why nobody's really talking about any of the extra games of the series much anymore.
But yes, Brotherhood of Steel they hated more because, like, Brotherhood of Steel was also blamed for killing the PC to the early 2000s Van Buren version of Fallout 3. But yeah, realistically, like, the Fallout fans have been... I remember way back when Fallout 3 came out on 360, there was a Penny Arcade blog post where Jerry Holkins described them as the posters on the No Mutants Allowed forums as like obsidian glistening shards of hatred. And that's basically the best way to describe how they were basically throughout the 2000s. It's something.
Yeah. Well, it's just social media gave these people a giant megaphone, you know?
Yeah, like, the thing you always run into is that, like, amount of people who talk about video games online is, relatively speaking, just tiny fraction of the people who actually play them. See, also, like, going online to discuss media is still nerd activity. Still nerd.
Yeah, and it's a full present. Yeah.
The issue is more that, like, decision makers trying to, like, publishers, developers, trying to get feedback, trying to get something actionable, those are the only people they're going to see. Like, you can try to counteract this by, like, seeking out, like, consumer surveys. Like, this is technically what things like focus testing are supposed to be for. But you get, like, it's really hard to get, like, useful information out of those two. But you get a lot more actionable info out of, like, internet psychopaths. You just also get a lot more, like, you get extremely, like, weirdo opinions. Like, truly broken people screaming at you. So, it's included.
I've seen such people. Like, people saying that Breath of Fire 5 is not the best and only good one.
Speaking of broken people.
I like 2.
Yeah. We're killing it for tonight, so Wheels doesn't go on this tangent.
Eventually, I'm going to play Breath of Fire 3 and 4, eventually. But I think 1, 2, and 5, they're all different games. They do different things quite well. Or not so well in other cases. But it's like... Yeah. I mean, my copy of Breath of Fire 5 actually has the Roman numeral V on it. So
they did do that in Japan.
If you will. Yeah. But it's one of those where... See how if they had marketed it under a different name, it probably would still be more popular with certain fans than it is now. So...
But I think they'd still have been pissed off about it. Unless it got on more traditional follow-up.
Possibly once they realized it was supposed to be about the higher game. or the Lufia 2 remake on the DS that I reviewed a year or two ago. Where it was just like, if they had, just changed the title just a little bit and said it was anything but a remake of Lufia 2, it probably would have gone over better.
But then it wouldn't have been marketable.
I mean, it was barely marketable to begin with in America.
Yeah.
So,
but they were
Japan,
definitely.
It would probably work okay if it just said, this is the next Lufia game. Yay.
Finally, Ruins Chaser.
Better than Ruins Chaser.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a bad game. It was playable. It was goofy. It was fun at times. It arguably did several characters better than the original. It just wasn't the original, and it was definitely a different kind of game. So,
where can I find books instead of video games? Video games are over. Books are...
if only. But yes.
Great job breaking all your lockpicks there, buddy.
Listen.
I'm not checking.
Lockpicking is hard.
You roll the 2 instead of a 5. Yeah, that's all.
Well, I don't get to pick the rolls.
That's what I mean. It's like, what is it, D&D? Jesus.
Yeah. Yes. Most much like a fictional game in certain books.
And why are you killing these cool looking purple guys?
Let us finish the transition. Damn.
Sorry, guys.
So just be sure, don't try to pick your own nose with those picks, okay? I know at least one game where that can kill you.
Yes, yes, that's Quest for Glory, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Can also work.
Successfully. Huh?
But it can also work.
I think, yeah, you can successfully pick your own nose, but on a failure, you manage to kill yourself.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like Quest for Glory.
Yeah. I mean, this is the game that let the series that lets you overdose on healing potions in one game. So, okay. Anyway, so speaking of other things that began as other things, so we have a book series that started off with a simple question of, what would I do if my niece asked me to run a Pathfinder game? And that's somehow turned into about one War and Peace worth of fantasy literature and metastory. Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. The final two episodes are going up at the end of this month. I am arranging a sale. Ooh, I need to actually finish arranging that sale. So have fun. Check it out. Also, Tanuki as a Teapot, Japanese folktales and just random cultural insights. I need to finish up a few more for the next book in that set to do eventually. Vainglorious Long as the Night, which began as a random thought of how to do a proper Universal Pictures Monsterverse video game. After the Mummy reboot just turned out so awful, turned into something completely different and much less targetable for copyright violations. So, Vainglorious Long as the Night, Lit RPG, Metroidvania, B movies galore. Yep. So, but yeah, lots of stuff to read. So, go ahead, please. Okay. I'm going to you, Joe.
My turn. Smoking Joe Gamer. I jumped on a bit late and didn't have much to say today, but I still had fun. And so let's see. You can find me on the RP Gamer Twitch channel. And I stream Tuesday and Thursday nights, usually starting around 10 p.m. So over this past week, I did two streams of Kingdom Hearts 2, the final mix. And so far, wow, this is so much better than the first game. It's just, there's more fluidity to the combat, and I'm interested to see where the story goes, even though, you know, I skipped the two entries you guys said that I could skip, and now I have no idea what's
there's
going on.
There's only one entry in between one and two.
Okay, well, whatever. So,
chain of memories, and, like, I'll put it this way, Sora doesn't know what's going on.
Okay. Yeah, because they give me this new person who kind of looks like Sora, and he's other. I've just been calling him Other Sora, and and so it's just I'm still in that starting city, but I think I'm well. No, you know what? No, I went to the Beauty and the Beast place. So yeah, I made it out of the starting city, and of course, Beast doesn't know who they are. It's like, huh? Okay, he's got memory lapse, so let's figure that out.
Kind of recognizes Sora, but that's about.
Yeah, so I am enjoying Kingdom Hearts 2 so far. That's what I'm going to be streaming for the foreseeable future for RP Gamer. Now, I was determined to finish at least one JRPG for JRPG July, so I did finish Kingdom Hearts 1 just in time, but I also went back and finished the Super Mario RPG remake for the Switch, and boy, what a great game. You know, just so many improvements over the original. Not that there was anything wrong with the original, but you get updated graphics and some other quality of life features, and it's just easier. So I was able to beat Smithy in one try, although I did almost lose. So it's like, okay, yeah, the challenge is still there. So I had some fun with that. And then I did try out the new character in Street Fighter VI, and she's a lot of fun to play. She really just has a different style from other characters, although she reminds me of Adon a little bit. Just the way she moves around and stuff. So that's fine. And I have yet to start the Bubbly Basin in Pokapia, but I'm going to, and then I'm probably going to make a video out of it to show off the new content. And I did do a short video of Splatoon Raiders, which I've also been playing still. So yeah, if you go over to YouTube and look up Smoke and Joe Gamer there, you can find some of my YouTube content. I am looking to replace my motherboard. I have a replacement coming this week, and I hope that will fix some of the issues I had trying to record content in 4K. So here's hoping that that does the trick. And unfortunately, I cannot afford to upgrade or buy a new computer at this point in time. It's just the parts are way too freaking expensive. It sucks. What are you going to do? So that's all I got. Oh, and you can follow me on Blue Sky, but I don't know. I guess you could if you wanted to.
Do it.
But do it.
Yeah, I saw somebody the other day was like really down on himself and really in a bad place, I guess. And then I look and it's like he's got 2,000 followers. And I'm like, yeah, I guess that doesn't make people happy, huh? Yeah, social media is a poor substitute for real contact. I don't know.
Well, we do this every week, even though we're slowly going insane.
Exactly. Slowly?
So I hope to not become one of those people where it's like, no one likes me. And it's like, well, actually, 2,000 people do like you. You have literal empirical evidence that some people do like you. What's wrong? Come on, cheer up, buddy. So I don't know. And just Blue Sky does have a lot of people. Man, you can get in a lot of trouble if you praise or denounce the wrong games, let me tell you. So
often it's the same game.
Yes.
Breath of Fire is bad.
Sure.
For the controversial swings there, buddy.
I don't have strong opinions about it, so that's fine.
Neither do I, actually.
And if you'd like to argue
doing this bit for nearly 10 years.
If you'd like to get into pointless arguments about video games, you can join the RP Gamer Discord server.
How am I saying nearly 10 years? It's probably been over 10 years.
Probably. No, the bit in the non-podcast version was complaining about Tails fans. They were bad.
Yeah, it was. Moving on. But yeah, you can ask, like, dear friends, Damon, Fireminer, and Strawberry Eggs did. You can ask us questions via the comments section, as Shaman and Strawberry Eggs did. We try to keep tabs on those. You can also ask us questions in the... which, if you want to go to the comments, that's on rpgamer.com. You can also ask us questions in the RP Gamer Discord, which you can get to by going to rpgamer.com and clicking Community. Plenty of friendly people to talk about your favorite RPGs and non-RPG things there. You can also ask us questions by going by catching us when we're streaming. We typically stream at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Sundays for our sister show Shenanigans, and somewhere around the 8 to 8:30 p.m. Pacific mark on Mondays for the current show you're listening to right now, Q&A Quest. But that about wraps it up for us. So see you, Space Cowboys.
See you.
See ya.
Mole man joke.
This is Mole Man in the morning.
Hold on, let me press the button. I'm gonna press the button, goddammit. If I can get it. Instead I went to my private messages. Where is the thing?
Sent you an important
It stinks.
Damn it.
That's the wrong thing.
Thinking so long.
Fun?
We're taking away. Done. I'm out.
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good Mole Man to you.
You finally found the right one. Jesus.
You know what?
He just left.